Time for more of the Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why, on TalkZone.com.
This is Bob Woodson again, and you're listening to the Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why. We're talking about the community activists who have the power to transform the lives, choices, and behavior of high-risk kids. Our first guests have been Todd and Lance Furtado, the brothers who have transformed their lives from the world of drugs and gangs to founded a nonprofit organization called the King of Kings Foundation, and they spend all of their time motivating young people and serving as role models for how to live a responsible life. We're also joined by Pastor Buster Soares, senior pastor of First Baptist Church of Lincoln Gardens, Somerset, New Jersey. Welcome, Clyde and Pastor Soares, again. And you were saying, Lance.
Yes.
You were commenting about the kind of role model that you represent to these kids, that you are available 24/7 to these kids. And one cannot say that about a lot of people who are supposed to be advocates for kids.
Exactly. And that's one thing that the youth truly respect, that you make yourself available and you come down to them. You see eye to eye what they're going through. And yes, they have our cell numbers, and we use our cells as beacons, as a motivational tool to them. Like, hey, look, all we've known since we were 11, 12, and 13 were the streets. All we've known all our lives was gangs and drugs and things of this nature. And if we can change our lives, you also can change yours. You know, so we talk to them. First we find out, because the first thing we do is we promote education. We cannot emphasize how important it is to have an education. And, when we greet, our youth, and our young adults on the streets, the first thing we ask them is, hey, did you finish school? Did you finish high school? Do you have your diploma? Would you like to receive your GED? We have a program in place where we have tutors available that will help assist you. Those who have their GEDs, we ask them, are they interested in learning a trade, whether it be computers or whether it be plumbing, electricity, whether it be automotive. We have so many things available through our organization that we can point these kids in the right direction, because we do understand that a lot of the decisions that one make comes from the lack of income. So people are really just trying to keep food on the table and a roof over their head. So what we want to do is, we don't want to give them the fish, we want to teach them how to fish. So we say, hey, we have, various, agencies that are involved with us that will teach you any trade you would like to learn where you can help change and better your situation. And the youth respect that coming from us. And we let them know, like, hey, listen, there's nothing wrong about squaring up. There's a, cliche saying that, if you ever wanted to hide anything from a black person, just put it in a book. Well, we beg to differ. We promote, please pick up a book and read. Please pick up a book and read. Don't worry about someone saying to you, oh, man, every time I see you, you got your face in a book. What are you, some type of nerd? What are you, some type of square? I turn around and tell them, hey, guess what? That same person that's calling you a square or a nerd, tomorrow they'll be calling you boss. And when I say that to them, see, what me and Todd do, we give them food for thought. We give them things to think about when they scratch their head and say, hey, you have a point there, you're right. Because, see, we understand that you can't force feed. And that's one of our unique qualities. We understand the culture environment that we're dealing with because we're a direct product of that. So we know how to approach it.
Buster, what has been the response to other members of your church? I know that Pastor Floyd Flake, these men are members of his church, and he is supportive. But what has been the reaction of your church members or the people in your social setting there?
Well, it's mixed. We have people in our church who, quite frankly, are not as receptive to people who have changed as they should be. It's an ongoing struggle to ensure that people who come to the church acknowledging the things they did wrong, they are given as much respect as people who don't acknowledge it. I mean, the only difference between people in church is whether they acknowledge their sins or not. And so it's a struggle. It's a struggle because the church has taken on some very cultural habits that have nothing to do with the Bible. And the church is often committed to status, and it panders to people who give a lot of money. And so I've had some struggles. Now, what I did in my case was we have a little security committee in the church that makes sure that the money is safe and that people are safe. And the chairman of that committee is a retired state police major. And the co-chairman is a former convicted felon who spent about 12 years in the state penitentiary. So they work side by side. And I think that's made a statement to the church. The fellow who is the gatekeeper, he calls himself the gatekeeper on our staff, it was addicted to heroin for years and knows everybody in the neighborhood. And that's why our church is not vandalized. People don't break in and steal. And we have a certain credibility. If I sent most of my deacons out to the housing development next door, they come back beat up. So it's a matter of identifying people's strengths and their gifts and making sure the institution puts the right people in the right positions.
Can I share something?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Exactly what the pastor just spoke on. That was one of the things that kind of swayed our decision in the lifestyle that we chose. Because when we were little and we were growing up and we were in our community, right, and the guys that we saw, you know, that were dressing nice and had nice cars, you know, it looked like they always had a smile on their face and they lived carefree. And, you know, the people that we saw working hard jobs, you know, or working hard, should I say, 9 to 5, blue-collar workers going to work every day, coming home and, you know, being responsible, it seemed like life was so hard for them. And then we looked at our neighborhood patrons that had stores, right? And they were good, honest guys, and the stores always got broke into. And then the same guys that we saw looking, dressing nice and driving the nice cars, they had stores also. But nobody messed with their stores. And we was like, hey, this guy here, you know, seems to have more respect. And, you know, that was another thing that kind of just, like I said, it was a trap. We fell into that trap, you know, subliminally, you know, thinking that, hey, you know, this is the way to go. Because you have to remember, and I'm quite sure you both can understand what I'm about to say. We grew up in the late 60s, the early 60s. So in that time and era where we were growing up, it was virtually unheard of for blacks or minorities to be in the type of positions that they are in today as entrepreneurs, as in managerial positions, supervisors, having their own businesses. NBA ball players didn't make the type of money that they're making today. There was no such thing as rap, so the younger guys wasn't making that type of money. And as a matter of fact, the most common job was a factory job. And I believe the minimum wage back then was $1.65 or something. So it was really, you know, hard living. And even though some might describe it as good living, but it was hard living. And we watched our mom working two jobs, barely keeping a roof over our head and keeping food on the table. And we're wearing hand-me-downs and we're saying, hey, we're looking at this picture and we're saying, well, this picture over here makes more sense. So, but what we want to do now is break that generational curse. You know, have the youth understand that when you sit back and analyze it properly, and you look at anybody that's ever been involved in the streets or involved in gang life, and call themselves living the life of Rally, the most they ever had was a 2 or 3 year run, and then they spend the rest of their life incarcerated or, you know, paralyzed for life or just dead. On the other hand, that same hardworking, you know, citizen that went to work every day, 10, 15 years down the line, guess what? They achieved their goals. They have their home, you know, they have their, you know, their house is paid for. They have the car of their dreams parked in front of their house. Their kids are going through school and going through college. And you're sitting back, and now we're really starting to understand that, hey, we fell into a trap.
Yeah. You know, the whole issue of using people with your kind of experience was really memorialized in the movie It Takes a Thief. I'm sure you've seen that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Very familiar with that. That was the young man who was a great forger, right?
Yes. Leonardo DiCaprio played the part of a man who actually existed. At age 21, I think he had built about millions of dollars from the world financial markets. He posed as a lawyer and actually took the bar exam and passed. And he posed as a doctor, an airline pilot, and flew all over the world. And he even issued cashier's checks that the banks couldn't even detect. And finally, in the movie, he was caught and he was sent to federal prison. And the FBI agent who tracked him developed a friendship and visited him when he was on maximum security and showed him some bank securities and asked him which ones were forgeries. And the man could determine, because of his criminal background, he could determine them. And so eventually he was he was granted parole years and years before his time served. And he actually went on the payroll of the FBI and in real life became a multimillionaire consultant to the very world financial community from which he had stolen millions of dollars, because they said it takes a thief to catch a thief. And it's very interesting that we are able to, in areas of the financial markets, take someone who took from a community and then use them to help restore that same community. But we're having difficulty, same principle, having difficulty embracing people like yourself and recognizing that, just like the Leonardo DiCaprio, you have skills and talents that and able to do things that no one else can do. You are uniquely suited for this work. And the challenge, and Buster, I'm directing you, you know, I would think with all of the facts that we have, the effectiveness as it, that people would be breaking down the door saying, how can we get people like this to help reduce violence in our, but that is just not the case. What do you think the big resistance is? We're doing it it takes a thief, but not in we can restore a life.
Well, I think two things have happened in New York. One is something that we confront all the time, and that is the industry that makes money off of other people's problems, I'm sure, feels slighted, because there are people who went to college to learn how to do what these brothers do well. And they perceive themselves as being the proper agents in this business. You know, they're social workers who have degrees and licenses. And so that whole industry monitors the distribution of resources. And whenever the resources go to other people, they rise up. I think also these brothers have gotten caught in a political crossfire. And that's the tragedy of politics today. Politicians have a tendency to fight each other and not care who gets killed in the process. And I think some of what's happened in Queens is that Pastor Flake and others have grown to have so much influence that there are people who are now attempting to bring them down. And these brothers are caught in that crossfire.
And I think you're right about that, and that's why it's important for shows like ours and others to stand up with people like the Furtado brothers, to stand with them and get the word out that they are not the problem, that they are the solution.
Yeah.
And
if it takes a thief to catch a thief, it takes a thug to change a thug.
That's right. And you know what? One of our mission statements is from the streets back to the streets.
Right.
And that's a principle that we've been pushing, and we're going to stay with it until it becomes mainstream and until it becomes a part of this fabric. But these are just amazing accomplishments. I wanted to ask you, Lance and Todd, what is your most dramatic example of where you've been able to reach a young person? Does one come to mind?
Yes. One incident sticks out. Todd and I were asked to come in and speak to a gym full of youth that were really involved in basketball. They didn't care nothing about what we had to say. But I expressed to them, and how I caught their attention was that I was also a basketball player, and I played for my school, and I had the potential to possibly go a little further and make it to the NBA. And I shared with them that, you know, they were the perfect target, because it takes a lot of heart to get on that hardwood and play ball. And Todd and myself, we walked out of there, and we've done hundreds of presentations and workshops, but this one particular time we felt that, wow, we didn't reach none of these kids. So we really felt let down, like we let them down. And about 6 months went by, and this happened to be up in Pennsylvania. And we saw it was like a bunch of kids. It was about 30 kids or so, because it was about 600 kids altogether. But it was like just one group, 30 of them, that was like really, really just being, you know, disruptive. All they wanted to play was basketball. And it was like, come on, we don't want to hear this. And about 6 months went by, and we saw five of those same 30 kids. And they said, Mr. Furtado. And we was like, we stopped and say, hey, how you doing? I said, do we know you? They said, you might not remember us. They said, but remember one time you came to Chester, PA, and you spoke at a gym? I said, yeah, I remember. They said, yeah, we were part of that 30 kids that were up in the, you know, the bleachers making all the noise and all of that. I said, yeah, I remember. He said, well, we just wanted to share with you that everybody in that gym, including us, heard everything you said, it resonated, and guess what? It helped save some lives, because we had a different change. We had a different mindset after you left. After you left, we got on the side and we talked by ourselves, and we started analyzing some of the things you said, and guess what? All of us decided to stay in school, to further our careers, and even though we were realistic saying, hey, we might not make it to the NBA, but we're going to use ball as a vehicle to get us a free education. So that was one of the times where it was dramatic for me and Todd, because we really felt that we didn't accomplish our goals for that day.
Right. And if I may, there was one brief one. We spoke.
Just hold it to after the break, and I want to make a comment. I know Pastor Soares has to leave, but I want to comment on something that I experienced with him that speaks to the same issue. We're talking about the power to transform high-risk kids. Our guests have been Todd and Lance Furtado, the brothers who have transformed their lives and spent all their time motivating youth away from the life that they used to lead. And Pastor Buster Soares, Senior Pastor, First Baptist Church of Lincoln Garden, Somerset, New Jersey. I'm Bob Woodson, President of the Center for Neighborhood Enterprise, and we will return right after these messages.